Wow. How's it going, DEF CON?
Wait a minute. That's the DEF CON fuckers to you.
They're still talking. They haven't been partying hard enough, I guess, but.
Oh.
Well, hey, thanks for coming, guys. Appreciate it. This talk is owning one to rule them all. And we'll get started in a second with that. But first, I want to introduce Dave DeSimon, who's been a good friend of mine for a very, very long time. Dave used to work at a Fortune 50, something like that, I don't know, and did the security penetration testing and all that good stuff there. And I've known Dave for a number of years and hired him where I was at before I left to start my own company. And so his areas of expertise are really in the penetration testing side and network security side. And he's been working and busting his ass in this presentation. I've been kind of just watching him. So unfortunately, he had the pleasure of working with me. About myself, I'm a founder and principal security consultant at TrustedSec, which I started like 3 weeks ago. So, hey, that's always good. I created the Social Engineer Toolkit. One of the authors of the Metasploit, the Penetration Tester's Guide, and on the Backtrack Development Team. So thanks again for a bit for coming. So the basic concept behind this talk is really around, as penetration testers, when we go into organizations, we like to find new and unique ways to own everything, okay? Because we get hard-ons when we compromise domain controllers, we get hard-ons when we compromise the entire infrastructure. And so this one is kind of like the best of everything. So what we'll show you is kind of a unique way to basically compromise the entire infrastructure and get shells back from every single computer on the entire network. So it'll be fun. And this is repeatable in most companies. I've actually used the first part of this technique, which when I tell you the first part, it's so stupidly simple, you all need to smack yourselves in the back of the head for not thinking of this before me, because it's definitely not that smart. And then after that, we'll go into the actual cool part about it. But before we get into that, every time that I speak at DEF CON, I like to pull pranks on my friends. And so if you came to DEF CON last year, where's Adam at? Where's Adam? Right there. He's got a phobia of toothpaste where when you brush your teeth in front of him, he starts like dry heaving and vomiting everywhere, okay? And so we brushed our teeth on stage and all that good stuff and made him dry heave and basically run out of the room screaming. And so every year it's been kind of one after another. So this year we decided to do something interesting to one of our coworkers at the office. And I have to give Dave the amount of credit because I didn't realize, but on your iPhone, when you take your iPhone on, this isn't an iPhone, it's a Samsung, but when you take your iPhone out, you can go like this, and the little arrow buttons take pictures. And so we've been basically taking hidden pictures of one of the coworkers at the office with some specific habit that he uses. So we wanted to do a little demonstration before we started. And it's only going to take 2 minutes, so I don't want to take too much every time here.
Steve,
come on out.
Right in the middle.
He hasn't seen this yet.
Ha 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 ha
Thank you, Steve.
Sorry, buddy.
Thank you very much. Sorry. Hey. You're still hot.
So that's all we got, so see you guys later. No. So first, as we're going through this, we're going to talk about a lot of concepts that you're probably familiar with, some of them that you aren't. But what we'll do is we'll cover this step by step and show you what we do. And literally, you know, it's interesting. We go into a lot of large organizations, and this works every single time. So you'll see the first part, and you're like, ah, shit, I can't believe anything about that. And then the second part is really badass. So, Pixie Boot. Has everybody heard of Pixie Boot? Pronounced Pixie Boot. Does anybody use Pixie Boot in their corporations? Pretty much everybody, right? And so it allows you the ability to boot to different images on the infrastructure network. There's a bunch of different types of technologies with Pixie Boot that we'll cover. But basically, you know, you plug into the network and, you know, through a virtual machine or whatever, you're on the internal network. It goes and it loads a base image onto your computer for that corporate standard, okay? And the reason being is Pixie Boot is very specific on being able to transfer an entire base image over to your computer over the network. And it's awesome for security administrators, systems administrators, so that they can actually transfer files to their actual computer themselves. So it's really important for them so that, hey, you know, they got a trouble ticket, they can't figure the person's thing out, they call the person on the phone, they actually reimage the computer for them without having to actually get up or go to the location. So, seriously, all these pictures are random. We just found them on the internet, so they have nothing to do with anything we're talking about. The dog was pissed when I was lighting his hands on fire. But every vendor has a solution for Pixie Boot. I mean, Symantec has them, Microsoft has them. We'll be covering most specifically with Microsoft. The most two prevalent ones that we run into are mostly Zero Touch and Light Touch, which are the two main predominant Pixie Boot technologies behind the side of the house. And so with Pixie Boot, it allows you to authenticate and use one of these type of technologies to actually go and use it. So again, there's a whole bunch of other ones out there. Light Touch, it actually requires user interaction. So when you boot from a network interface and you download the base image, it actually prompts you for user credentials to use, okay? So some actually require a password, some actually require authentication to actually go to it. In most cases, the file shares are actually stored on an image, and they either have everyone open to them, which is a very useful thing for us as penetration testers to replace the base image of a corporation, or the second way is they usually put domain user credentials up there for permissions and allow it to that. So here's just a simple Light Touch interface and what you would actually see if you boot from the network from a Light Touch infrastructure. Here's what it actually requires you for authentication. And here's where it actually allows you to gain access into joining the actual domain and all that good stuff. Now what we mostly use in most corporations is Zero Touch because we don't want interaction with the user. We don't want to have to tell them how to put this in. It requires a lot of knowledge on the end user side to actually go and use. So what this does is it allows the entire corporate image onto to the actual computer itself without any authentication. And it's what's predominantly used everywhere. Does anybody here use Zero Touch? No one wants to raise their hand? A couple? But so this is what Zero Touch looks like. This is for a Windows XP one. This is basically a Zero Touch. This is when we plugged into the network and we started booting from Pixie Boot and started loading the base image of the corporation on this. That's the actual deployment tool that's actually going through and running the deployment. And then it goes and it starts up our Windows environment. So starting Windows. It goes and it finishes all the configurations. And now we have a pristine copy of Windows 7 that's actually on the network infrastructure. So like I said, this is the easy part about it. It gets very much more complex in a second. The first phase of the attack is when we boot into a Pixie environment on the corporate network and we load a base image. Okay? From there, you dump the local admin passwords on the actual machine itself, and then now it allows us to leapfrog to other systems on the network. So again, smack yourselves in the back of the head. Very easy concept. It's automatically joined to the domain, so a lot of times with Symantec, for example, you have to log into the actual base image when you're creating it. And so it has domain cache credentials a lot of times for different things, but there's a lot of information that you can find in there. But we don't really care about this part. This is just one method to get the information that we need in order to do the rest of what we're about to do. So, and you can use any concept of compromising any system, okay? But we're going to talk about that one that's most important. So when we did this, we decided to, and isn't that creepy? Again, random image has nothing to do with, anyways. What we decided to do the first time is when we got access to a base image in the Pixie Boot type environment, we basically went through and looked at what was actually on the server itself, what services and things like that. And what we noticed was this awesome thing called SCCM, this SCCM agent. People are like, oh, shit, that's cool. So through this, we started looking at what we could do with SCCM and how we could leverage it to actually go after an organization and target it through an actual patch management server. So.
Hello. Hey. OK, who all here uses SCCM? Pretty standard, correct? OK, so System Central Configuration Manager. So basically, in an environment, AG Central environment, it's used as many uses, but one of the uses that we looked at was the patch deployment and also the software deployment. Replace WSUS, also SMS. The main purpose, it's pretty easy. It's something to patch systems, something to software deployment, build systems. You can do a lot of things with it. We decided to look at the software distribution method. So here's the SCCM architecture, based from Microsoft's site. So you have many different sites. Clients can be on all of these sites. What our focus was on is the central site. You have management points, distribution points, software update points, secondary, primary, so on and so forth. So on the central site, we're looking at that and then also the source servers, so basically where all the packages are. So that's what we're trying to attack. That's the basic architecture of what most companies will look like. So phase two of our attack, or three.
They're together, so it's two.
It's two. So on the compromised machine, so when a zero touches machine is built, it's obviously going to have the SCCM agent on it, right? So when you want someone to build it, it's going to have all the packages on it. Everything's going to already be there, all your patches, so you're not spinning up a vulnerable machine, obviously. But what we found out is, as Dave said earlier, is that as a standard user, you can pull a lot of information from the SCCM agent that can help you in an attack. You can pull your site code, you can pull your package ID, you can pull how often it runs. These are all things that we utilize within the attack to ensure once it gets on the system that it's running every single day, so anything that it's pushed out to is going to be spawning back to us. Also, it's possible to review SCCM logs to also get the primary server name and also the source server information. Here's a screenshot of the SCCM agent. So, I don't know if anyone can see it or not, but basically the management plane is what's darkened right there. So that is what we're going to be attacking. That is the main server that we're going to be going after. Everything else is information about you, your IP address, your fully qualified domain name, logged on user. You should already know that, but the management plane is what we really want to focus on.
And I use this not only in a direct attack when we're doing internal pen tests, for example. I use this a lot of times with the social engineer toolkit. Right, very easy to gain access to a domain user account to where we can actually start to exfiltrate a lot of this data where we want to go after the other servers itself. So just another concept too.
Here are the screenshots of the SCCM logs that are available to users. Obviously within here you're going to see that we have our command line, what's being run, the package name, the program name, the site code, what the user context, what it's running as, anti-authority system. And all of this information we're recording and then going to be using later on. And then here's a screenshot of the SCCM logs, another log. That will tell you the date and time that's running. You can actually then parse through them to see which one's once again running every single day. This will tell you the advertisement ID and then the package ID and then the program name, which we'll get to.
My cat is pissed.
Dave.
Oh. So what we have so far is we have local admin credentials in some way, shape, or form, or domain user credentials in some way, shape, or form on local systems that we can then possibly use to log into another server, okay, or at least get to access to the source directory, which either has domain user credentials or it has administrative level credentials, local. And so the SCCM management server, we have the SCCM management host name, which we're able to be provided by the logs, and then we have the SCCM package ID, which we'll be using during an attack. And as Dave mentioned, when he's going through those logs, he's looking for something that's repetitive, right? A lot of times there'll be polls like VB scripts looking for certain permission types or resetting people's profiles. There's scripts that are run basically every single day and continuously every single day that you can use as far as injecting into that and actually patching the source directory. And so, we have all these things available to us, and this is what we need for our specific attack. So the goal of all of this is to log into the SCCM server with either local administrator level accounts or based on how it's set up, domain user credentials, gain access to the source repository, which is typically on the central management server itself, which we already have, and then we're going to either pack or backdoor the actual SCCM server that allows it to deploy malicious payloads to the actual entire organization. Now, what's interesting with this is you can do it a few different ways. A lot of times, the scripts that are running don't always have an executable with them. And so you can modify those scripts to then deploy and actually send the packages to the entire company and just put your own packed binary or executable in there or backdoor. But also what you can leverage is a lot of times is back, you know, actually backdooring an entire executable or PE file itself on the actual legitimate package. Mm-hmm. So. Dave?
So, step one of the attack, obviously, log on to the SCCM server as the local administrator. So when we do that, we need to find the source repository on that system. The source repository is going to be where all the packages are stored. To do that, there's one of two ways. The one is more difficult, and you're going to fail at it. If it's set up incorrectly, it's going to work fine. The other one is stupid simple, so you just use that one anyways. So the first one, obviously, you could query WMI to figure out where the source repository is.
I see permission issues with that.
You're going to have permission issues. That's just something, if they're setting up the server correctly, that's going to happen. So when we hit that, it was kind of a roadblock. We really didn't know how to go further, how to get this information, because this is the key information that we need. We need to backdoor these files to be able to then get them to be deployed to get shells back to us. So really complex way, we search the application logs with an event viewer for the word source, and it kind of just lays it out there exactly where it's at. So it was pretty simple for us to figure out where it's located. Typically also on the machine, if it's on the same machine, you could do simple search for it. It's usually marked with a source $ or SCCM source $. Once again, this information is out there. People are using this currently right now, so it's easy to find.
Like I said, it has nothing to do with any of the slides whatsoever. So next we need to create a backdoor that won't be picked up by any type of antivirus or things like that before we actually launch the attack itself. What I'm going to show you is a very easy technique that I use all the time. There's actually two. I'll just cover one. But basically what we're going to do is a simple reverse shell, and then I'm going to actually show you a live demo of a fairly large network of over about 2,000 machines that we're going to go ahead and knock around. So what we need to do is we're going to create a simple reverse back shell, and we're going to have it connect back to us, okay? And it's going to evade everything out there, and I'll show you why in a second. So this is some Python, and I actually used this in my class at Black Hat earlier. But what this is a Python backdoor, okay? But you might be thinking to yourself, well, not everybody's going to have Python installed, so how am I even going to use it? So real quick, it's just we import a socket, we import subprocess, which then allows us to execute underlying operating system commands. We tell it what our reverse IP address is and what our reverse port is. We connect to our socket on that hosting port. We then iterate through a loop, and then we basically receive some data, which is going to be our command shell type thing, right? And then we're going to execute the actual process itself and actually execute the underlying system commands with that. And then we're going to take that value from proc, which is the command line that we receive data from the attacker machine, and then we're going to read it into standard out value. And then we're going to send that back to the actual attacker itself. And just going to keep going in a continuous loop, right? So it's just a simple, very easy reverse shell. Okay? Now, taking that Python and compiling it to a binary is somewhat funny because it's relatively easy and not a lot of people know about it. And what you can use is a tool called PyInstaller, which compiles the actual binary itself. It wraps the Python interpreter in the actual Python code itself and allows you to execute executables on the actual system stuff without Python being installed. And so this works on Linux, OS X, and Windows, and it's actually how the Social Engineer Toolkit Interactive Shell works, which we'll see a demo of. What happens with this is, you know, we basically take a very large shell that does AES encryption and a bunch of other stuff, byte compile it for the specific operating systems, whether it be Linux, Windows, or OS X, and then we deploy that package using PyInstaller. And on the website is just a simple script that I wrote that will create a binary for you. Just point it at the Python file, and it'll actually go and compile it for you so that you have your standalone executable there for you, okay? Here's just a very fast demo of building a shell. So over here, we have our shell, right? This is exactly what you just saw before. What we're going to do is we're going to run pybuild. Type in the shell, shell.py. It's going to go ahead and bytecompile for us. Just take a second. And then when we're done, we're going to go to our shell directory. And we now have a shell, okay? Simple. Now what we're going to do is we're going to run it. And actually, I didn't even check my IP address. So we need to bytecompile again. 136. 136. We're good. So let's do a simple netcat listener. 443. We're going to run it. And we have our command shell, okay? Great. Easy. So far. If we upload this guy, we'll see something like this. Or not like that. Like that. Like not like that.
Wait, no. Hold on.
Like that.
Like
okay.
That.
So you see you get past every single antivirus vendor out there. Now there's another cool technique that I use all the time. And it's in, I usually don't talk about it, but that's screw it. Fuck it. It's called, the guys at Null Security released this cool thing called Hyperion. And what Hyperion does is it actually takes your PE file and it makes it assembly code, and then it wraps itself around a 128-bit AES encrypted bubble, okay, with a randomized key every single time. It actually does five passes, so five keys basically, every single time. And so when you double-click it, you're like, well, how the hell am I going to put the key in there, right? Well, it brute forces its own key and then allows you to decrypt that file on the fly and then send you the shell back. So that also evades antivirus very well. So a very cool tool that I use all the time. So step three is we're going to take one of the source packages that we find, we're going to replace it with the backdoor version of the actual source directory itself, and then we're going to grab our reverse shell executable and use it as a backdoor, and either you can use like MSF Venom to then backdoor that executable or not, and then you have a new malicious package ready to be deployed.
Don't advance.
Hmm?
Don't advance.
What?
Don't advance.
I want to go advance. Yeah. Okay. Never
mind. So does anyone know why this right now would not work? If we have any SCCM administrators in here? Perfect. Was that? I heard it. Yes. The problem. Packets will not deploy without a proper signature or hash. So the way Microsoft does it is, once a package is created, you have the source directory, it creates a, I think it's SHA-256, creates a hash, and it keeps that. If we replace that, and let's say we try to force a package refresh, it's going to basically say the hashes are not the same. We're not valid. It will not deploy. It will be in logs. We don't want that. We got to get away from that. So we need to find a way to update the signature in order to complete the deployment.
I think it has nothing to do with the slides. But.
So new script is being released today. Basically what we decided the easiest way to do is go into the startup directory of any user on that machine. So the way we've seen it configured in most environments is that the people that are on the SCCM server are also the SCCM admins. Being that, if we put a script in their startup directory that basically will refresh that package, that package refresh will actually cause it to rehash itself, therefore not having any hashing issues then. So it automatically updates the package using SCCM admin's credentials, creates a new signature for the file, and then after it forces the refresh, then initiates the deployment of it then.
You'll see an automatic way that we've done after this too that automatically does it for you.
So here's a script. Credit for this has to go to one of our resident SCCM admins, Bill Reedshaw, who did not want to be mentioned.
So at all.
He just got his certificate, and he's worried Microsoft's going to take it away. So,
B-I-L-L, sorry.
Reedshaw, Bill Reedshaw. So, yeah. So
can we turn back time and not do that again?
Reedshaw. So what you're going to need is two pieces of information, which you already have from the client machine. You need the SCCM server, which we're already going to be on, and you need the package ID, which you can find in the client logs. So to step through this really quick, I was looking at the root SMS namespace of WMI, and then basically the only thing else we should really care about is the second last, which is object package refresh package source, refresh the package source at all distribution points. It's some people, I believe it was McDougall, said this is stupid simple. It's a correct way to say it, so it works.
Now in scenario two, there's a bunch of stuff that we can do with actual database, the actual SCCM database, and this is what's actually getting built into the new release of the social engineering toolkit, which I decided to add last night. So it's working, which is good. And we got the troll low guy in there. And so what this will do is it automatically use a combination of PowerShell, WMI, and updating the database to deploy our packages automatically for us. And so we'll show you a demo of that in a few minutes. That's it? This is me?
Yep.
Oh. So in SCCM 2012, what we're running into a lot of is SCCM 2012 makes things a lot easier for us. It's more centralized. It's more confined in nature. There's not a lot of different granular rules and permissions. What we found with prior versions of SCCM, it was very difficult to pull this thing off. It required you to get a lot of information. And so with SCCM 2012, they're also adding patching for Unix, Linux, and OS X as well. So you can go and patch anything else that you want to on the actual system itself, not just Windows-based devices, which is going to be helpful for us. Right? Oh, okay. So easy enough. We talked about this before. PXE boot into a Windows environment, which I guarantee you guys, if you go on a pen test, you will find that, or you social engineer somebody, right? You grab the information off of that and enumerate the SCCM location. You log into that with local admin rights or domain user credentials if you're allowed. Locate the source directory of the SCCM package. And then you grab the source files. A few people know that. So you grab the source files, you backdoor them, either with malicious code, or you add to the whatever script is refreshing on a regular basis. You update the startup scripts for the logged in users, and then you wait for shells. Now, also, pop a box. So we're going to walk you through the manual attack, and then we'll show you the automated one, which is sweet. Actually, hang on a second. Sorry, I just want to see it one more time.
Oh, wow. Okay. He's single.
Shit. I'm going to get his number after this. Oh, go ahead, sir.
He's rooming with Jamie.
Go ahead.
All right. So we're on the compromised machine. We're on the zero-touch machine. Basically go into control panel, look at configuration manager there, which is installed with SCCM. We're just going to run through this quickly. There's a general tab, there's a components tab, what's installed. We have any actions you want to run on that client, file collection cycle, things like that. Advanced, you can look at your site code, configuration site code, your update schedule. Didn't go to that tab. And then the general tab is really a tab that we need the information from. AD site name. We have our configuration site code, logged on user, logged on domain, NetBIOS name, and then the management point, is, as I said before, is what we're really looking for. So from that, we want to now take a look at the logs, see what other information we can get out of this. It's going to be Windows. SysWOW64, depending on architecture, CCM, logs, and then under exec manager, so anything that's executing on there is going to be under exec manager. SCCM has amazing logs for administrators and also for our purposes. So through here, you can't see because I had a blank because we were on a production server, but you have the advertisement ID, the package ID, what's being run, and all the way to the right, you're also going to see all the dates and times that it's running. So a quick search, you can see which ones are running repeatable, and those are the ones that we want to attack or target. So we have program name, package ID, and advertisement ID, which we're going to be using in our script.
So now we're on the SCCM. Dave actually forgot what he was doing.
I forgot what I was doing, so give it a second. Wait, hold on.
It's funny, he gets on the screen,
hold
he's
on.
Like... I actually stopped
and
it. I stopped it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Sorry. Just a dick. I was like, am I that retarded?
He's got the menus down there, and he's like, what am I doing?
Wait. Did someone poop?
Yeah. Something.
So, So from here, if you do a search in the event viewer for source, you could see basically right, you could have seen right there is going to be our source directory. If we click on that source directory, let's say if it's local or remote, you're going to be able to access then all of the software that is to be packaged or is packaged. These are all the source directories, all the source files on there. I know it sucks that you can't see it, but you guys can use your imagination with Explorer.
So see a loop door.
So we pick one. So we pick this one. We go ahead. We backdoor it. And Dave will be showing that later. And then from that, the only thing left to do now is put the script in the startup directory. So we make our configuration changes, change the SCCM server name, which we are already on it right now, the package ID, which we have from the logs that are available to us on the client. Basically, go ahead and put that into the startup directory of a targeted user or all users. Force them to log out or just wait. There you go.
I didn't even think about it. I could just say I'm going to do the second demo, but anyways. So I'm going to do the second demo using the social engineering toolkit. And actually, I want to do a shout out to Joey Furr down there, who I didn't even see in here, who's on the development team for the social engineering toolkit. So give a stand up and give a. Thanks for all of his hard work. A lot of hard work on this. So we're VPN'd in to a production environment, a fairly large infrastructure. Someday. Oh, wait, there it was up there. Sorry, I thought it was black. Never mind. So what we're going to do is we're going to run the social engineer toolkit, and this is version 3.6. Will be released probably later tonight when I get back to the hotel room. Yeah, it's called
Do the face.
So that's the new code name for Seth. It's a long story. We've been walking around Caesars going to people all day long. So anyways, that's how we do our fun. And then you click on the fast track penetration testing side of the house, and it's kind of hard to see there. Make sure we got some music here.
Yes.
And we're going to go through number 3, which is the SCCM attack vector. And we're going to enter. You'll see it as it pops up. It kind of sucks that you can't. Here, let me see if I can blow it up here and move it up. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. So then we're going to enter the IP address of the SCCM server, and the one that I'm going after is 192.168.225.131, I hope. And then the reverse IP address of the attacker machine, which is me, is going to be 136. Let me just confirm that real quick. 136. And then the username. It has something to do with hugs. And so what's going to happen here is it's going to start the social engineer toolkit interactive listener, which is 256AS encrypted. It's multi-thread. It's going to handle multiple things. It's going to patch the source directories for us automatically, insert the backdoor, byte compile it into the source path, and then do a bunch of cool stuff. My favorite band, Steel Panther. They're like real vulgar and a bunch of other stuff, so if you get a chance, check them out. But here we have 927 shells, and there'll be more flowing in as we go through this. So we're going to interact with just one, so we'll pick 917, see what we got here. So we're going to drop into a command shell, and this is the interactive toolkit built into the social engineer toolkit. Drop into a shell. Type in, who am I? So now we have shells basically over the entire network, as many as you want.
Thank you.
So wrapping things up. So fucking bananas are awesome.
And it, my son and my kids watch this show, the Fresh Beats Band, and they always do this banana song on it. But I figured a bunch of hackers wouldn't know what the Fresh Beat Band was, so I didn't play that, but it's actually like one of my favorite songs now. So, but this does work all the time for us. Like literally, I've been using the Pixie Boot technique for probably about 4 years, and I finally decided to talk about it. This works very, very easy on a lot of corporations, and everybody's using SCCM. So it's very easy to do, and it takes less than an hour to get everything up and running and actually sent out. And it's hard to protect against because everybody's using a combination of PXE and SCCM. But again, this doesn't have to be the only avenue that you use for this, right? It could be anything from social engineering to a direct attack on the actual server itself. I mean, we're not showing a zero day on compromising a server and getting access to it. We're showing how you actually patch the server itself. You actually patch the patching server and have that F stuff up. So,
Diabetes.
So, this is what gets me the most. Seriously.
Diabetes.
So when you're using PXE, you're using Pixie Boot, make sure that you can only Pixie Boot from certain network administrative level subnets and that they're VLAN'd off so that only support and everybody else can use it as a help desk or whatever. Monitor the SCCM service for malicious traffic. Any type of patching that's going to go on there are signature mismatches you can probably pick up on. Monitor source files for unwanted changes is going to be huge. A lot of times what I see a lot of organizations do once we actually go and do this attack, and we show them preventative measures against it, is they actually have change windows for specific patching and certain times that they allow patching. They have all of those signatures and hashes before they actually patch the server itself.
File integrity monitoring.
File integrity monitoring, things like that. You know, detective control is going to be your biggest thing on this, but it's relatively hard to. Like I said, we find this successful about 90% of the people that we go after. So one more thing, and this is before we wrap up here. So I did one joke on one of my friends, but I also want to embarrass the other because this is really weird for me. And actually, so if you know the Social Engineer Toolkit version 3.5 was called Creepy Carl. The reason why it was called Creepy Carl is because Carl, which is right
Carl,
there.
Carl, can you come up here?
Can you come up here
for a second?
Yeah, that's good.
He is creepy.
He's creepy. He talks.
Seriously.
Yeah. He's really creepy. So I have a party at my house. I have a party at my house, and I invite him over as a good friend of mine. And he doesn't know my wife really well. He's met her maybe once or twice. And so he goes over to my party. Everything's great. And then like 3 days go by, and he sends a direct message to my wife on Twitter. It says, serious question, no creepy intention. I think you were wearing perfume. What brand of perfume do you wear? I'd like to get that for my fiance.
I mean, seriously. Seriously. Who does this?
Who does that?
Who does that?
Who does that?
Fucking Creepy Carl does it.
Creepy Carl does it.
Carl, go stand over there.
Seriously, don't touch him.
Thank you. Thank you. Can we get
creepy.
That guy out of here? Hey.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. I know
one
you
second,
ran a little
one
short.
Second, one oh. second. One more thing.
Oh, God, no. Seriously?
Yes.
No.
So hold on. Hold on.
You gotta be fucking kidding me. You
we
said it wasn't anything.
A birthday boy in the house, okay? So,
are you serious?
Dave has done a lot for this community, as we all know. Dave has done a lot for me. It's my first time speaking. Seriously, I appreciate it. He's done the tools you release, the information you provide us. Thank you so much. So, from this, would everyone be cool singing Dave a happy birthday song? I think you'd really love it. Are we cool with this?
Wait, the only problem is happy birthday, you got to license it because it's going out on television. Okay. Hey, I did my job.
You did your job.
I got you something though, Dave.
There you go.
Oh, thanks, man.
So his birthday's on Monday if you see him. There you go. We good?
No, that's not for boys and boys.
On the count of three.
Count of three. One,
two,
three.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Love you.
Love you, buddy. Thanks. That's the best present ever.
Happy birthday to you.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Duck On.